The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Health Letter, also from the Harvard Heart Letter, and perhaps from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter as well. The first article comes from the Harvard Health Letter of July 2022, and it's entitled Protecting Independence, A New Angle on Aging in Place, The Virtual Village. And it says, the village model supports living at home and staying independent as we age. For most of us, Plan A for long-term housing is pretty simple. Live at home independently for as long as possible. Plan B gets more complicated. What will happen when we need assistance getting groceries, maintaining the house, going to the doctor, and staying socially connected? The answer for some people is a grassroots trend called a virtual village. A virtual village isn't a place, it's a group of people who live in their own homes near each other and agree to help each other. They form a self-governing nonprofit organization that offers membership to any household within its coverage area, which could include one or many neighborhoods. Village members volunteer based on their skills to provide services like managing the village's dedicated help hotline, transportation, errands, household repairs, friendly visits and telephone check-ins, social and educational events, exercise groups, technology support, and referral to vetted services and suppliers. The village is run by volunteers, although there might be one or two paid staffers. Membership may be free, or as much as $1,200 per year. There may be fees for some services too, like repairs. Living in a village helps you maintain independence and offers peace of mind that you have a support system. The village won't replace an assisted living facility or nursing home if that's what you need, but it may help delay the transition, says Dr. Suzanne Hartman, a geriatrician with Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Many of my patients move into assisted living because transportation becomes a big issue. Or they might need a private aid because they're no longer safe by themselves. If a village can solve transportation issues or help them find an aid, they may no longer have to leave home. A village also keeps people socially connected, which staves off loneliness and isolation. These factors are associated with chronic disease, cognitive decline, and premature death. If you're interested in finding a village in your area, you can check out the Village to Village website, and that's www.vtvnetwork.org. It has a map of villages throughout the United States and information about how to contact them. You might also get village information at your local senior center or regional area agency on aging, part of a network of more than 600 agencies that receive federal funding to coordinate older adult support services and provide referrals to them. You can find out more about this subject by going to www.health.harvard.edu/ECL. And it's a good idea to consult your doctor about whether the village model would be a good fit for your health and abilities. The sooner the better. Getting involved when you're still mentally and physically active will give you the best chance of living in your own home longer, Dr. Hartman says. You benefit at any age when you have a strong community and social network. And then there's a little bit more information about virtual villages. The first virtual village was founded in 2002 in Boston's Beacon Hill neighborhood. 2 decades later, there are now 280 villages coast to coast, with 80 more in development, and their demographics are increasingly diverse. There is a village in Oakland, California, that is mostly Asian American. There is an African American village in Washington, D.C. that received funding through the D.C. government. We're all asking the same question, which is, how do we survive and live in our community, and what services do we need? Says Barbara Sullivan, executive director of the Village to Village Network. VTV is the national nonprofit group, and that must stand for Village to Village, that offers guidance on starting a village and maintaining its services. The rise in villages also has the attention of Harvard researchers, who expect the trend to keep growing. The 80 and older population will double in the next 12 years. That's an age when disability takes a sharp turn upward, and we see an increased need for services like transportation. That speaks to me about the coming need, says Jennifer Molinsky, who leads research exploring housing challenges for the aging population at Harvard's Joint Center for Housing Studies. We're going to continue with the Harvard Health Letter for July. And the next article is called Braces Aren't Just for Teens. Even in later in life, braces can bring multiple health benefits. Adolescence is the ideal time to fix crooked teeth or a poorly aligned bite. But the teen years aren't the only time to get braces. A growing number of adults are turning to orthodontics, even in midlife and beyond. Although teeth seem like they're fixed firmly in place, they actually move throughout life. These tiny shifts can make a difference in your appearance or bite. Tooth loss for any reason, like an accident or advanced gum disease, also causes teeth to change position as neighboring teeth move into empty spaces, says Dr. Serkan Akhilesan, head of the orthodontics department of the Harvard School of Dental Medicine. These changes can lead to a smile that embarrasses you. Worse, they can cause some health problems. The health problems include malnutrition. If it's harder to chew efficiently, you may be less inclined to eat nutritious foods or to eat as much as you should. Increased risk for cavities and gum disease. Crooked teeth are harder to clean thoroughly. Food can get trapped in them, increasing the chances for bacterial growth and chronic inflammation in the mouth. It's an open invitation for gum disease and tooth loss, Dr. Akhilesan says. Chronic disease. Gum disease bacteria can get into the bloodstream and make their way to other parts of the body. The bacteria are known to cause infection of the heart valves. There is also some evidence they may play a role in high blood pressure, diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, osteoporosis, pneumonia, and even Alzheimer's disease. Fixing crooked teeth or a misaligned bite can help ward off these problems. It also can create space for implants to replace missing teeth or serve as anchors for bridge work. There's two main types of braces. One consists of a row of tiny brackets glued into the teeth on either side of the cheek or the tongue, and a wire that runs through the brackets to apply force. The force makes the teeth move gradually. Brackets are made of metal or a tooth-colored material and can be customized to the exact shape of your mouth. Tooth-colored brackets are more visually appealing, but are more likely to break than metal brackets. The other type of braces consist of a series of aligners, which are thin, clear plastic molds that you wear on top of the teeth 22 hours per day. We do a scan of your teeth and make a three-dimensional model of where we'd like them to end up. Then we create an aligner for each stage of the movement we want. Dr. Akilson says, you get a new aligner every 1 or 2 weeks. Getting braces is a big commitment. Here's what's involved. The first thing is time. The process may take 12 to 30 months for middle-aged or older adults, depending on what you need and which type of braces you choose. Both types can be used to move teeth, but for major tooth movement, metal and ceramics do the job faster than aligners, Dr. Akilson says. Next is discomfort. Braces don't hurt as much as they did years ago. It's no longer a concern for many patients. We have advanced materials and wires that generate light forces and allow movement at a comfortable pace. Next is cost. How much you pay depends on where you live and how complicated your treatment is. The range is $5,000 to $12,000. Medicare doesn't pay for braces, but some types of insurance pay for at least part of the process. Then there's maintenance. Both type of braces must be cleaned thoroughly each day. Cleaning braces installed on your teeth is more involved than cleaning aligners. People with certain underlying conditions are not good candidates for braces. These conditions include osteoporosis, certain types of kidney disease, and uncontrolled gum disease. Otherwise, there's no age limit to getting braces, and the results promote better health and self-esteem. Orthodontic problems are social problems, Dr. Akilson says. Braces provide the benefit of personal happiness and social well-being. If you have the motivation and the means, you should go for it. Now I'm going to do a couple of news briefs from the Harvard Health Letter. Again, this is July 2022. The first is entitled, More Blood Pressure Medication Recalls. Drug manufacturer Pfizer announced a voluntary recall of some types of blood pressure drugs in March and April of 2022. The move came after concerns that the drugs contain a potentially cancer-causing substance called N-nitrosoquinapril. That compound is a type of nitrosoamine, which is found in low levels in food and water. Exposure to high levels of nitrosoamines over time may increase the risk for cancer. The drugs in the Pfizer recall included certain batches of Acupril, as well as Acuretic, which is quinapril plus hydrochlorothiazide. These are tablets distributed by Pfizer, as well as two related generic formulations distributed by Greenstone. This latest recall comes a few years after other blood pressure medications were pulled from pharmacy shelves for the presence of another type of nitrosoamine. For more information, call your doctor or pharmacist and visit the HHP Medication Safety Watch, which is located at www.health.harvard.edu/MSW, which must stand for Medication Safety Watch. Finally, here's another news brief. Can a little bit of exercise lower your depression risk? As we often report, it doesn't take much exercise to make a big difference in your health. Small doses of physical activity might also be enough to stave off depression, according to a review of studies published online in April of 2022 by JAMA Psychiatry. The analysis included 15 studies from around the world, involving a total of more than 191,000 people. Compared with people who didn't exercise, people who racked up 75 minutes per week of moderate intensity exercise, like brisk walking, had an 18% lower risk of depression. The benefits were even stronger in people who accumulated 2.5 hours of moderate intensity activity per week. They had 25% lower risk of depression. If that sounds like a lot of time, remember that they're roughly the equivalent of a 10 or 20 minute walk per day. If you can do that, you can probably do a lot for your mood and well-being and improve many other aspects of your health to boot. And then there's an article also in the Harvard Health Letter of July entitled "Use Strength Training to Help Ward Off Chronic Disease." Strength training is well known for creating stronger muscles and bones, and the benefits don't stop there. A review of studies published online by the British Journal of Sports Medicine found that strength training is associated with a 10 to 17% lower risk of premature death from all causes, including heart disease, diabetes, and cancer. It's the latest of many studies to show a connection between strength training and good health. Strength training triggers many body reactions that protect us against chronic disease. It helps to reduce blood sugar, and it lowers the blood pressure. Increased muscle mass means there are more blood vessels or pathways for blood to flow through. That takes pressure off the cardiovascular system, says Dr. Deepak Bhatt, a cardiologist and editor-in-chief of the Harvard Heart Letter. High blood pressure is a major risk factor for heart disease. Strength training also burns calories. Muscles burn calories 24 hours a day. The more muscle you have, the more calories you use. This helps to reduce fat and control weight. Obesity is a risk factor for heart disease. Strength training also helps to reduce certain fat cells, which put out signals to the body that increases inflammation, explains Dr. Edward Phillips, associate professor of physical medicine and rehabilitation at the Harvard Medical School. Chronic inflammation, the persistent activation of the immune system, is associated with heart disease, diabetes, cancer, and other chronic illnesses. How much strength training is necessary? The 2022 review suggests that 30 to 60 minutes of weekly strength training leads to the highest amount of benefits. That's in line with the current physical activity guidelines for Americans. If you work all major muscle groups, it should take about 30 minutes. So do 30 minutes twice a week. You can also just do a 10-minute session 6 days per week, maybe after your daily walk. But it's okay if you're not at that level yet. One of the good things about exercise is the benefits are incremental. It's not all or nothing. If you can't do twice a week, once a week's better than nothing. Be sure to get a doctor's okay before beginning a strength workout if you have problems with your bones, your balance, or your heart. Once you get the green light, you have many options for workouts. Ordering some resistance bands for a few bucks and following a video online will ease you into it. Or take a beginner yoga class, follow an online video about free weights for beginners, or use the Harvard Special Health Report Strength and Power Training for Older Adults at www.health.harvard.edu/SPOA. You can go to a local health club or gym and use weight machines or take a strength training class. But you should be sure to get instruction before starting a routine like that. Work with a physical therapist or a certified strength and conditioning specialist, Dr. Phillips advises. No matter which approach you choose, make sure to strengthen all of your major muscle groups, including your arms, buttocks, and legs. Two important aspects of regular strength training are warming up and cooling down. A warm-up could be a few minutes of dynamic stretching, marching in place and moving your arms around, or it could be your regular aerobic workout, like a daily brisk walk. After you do strength training, do a cool-down of static stretching, holding a stretch position for up to 60 seconds. This will keep your muscles long and supple. The article goes on to describe the most important strengthening exercise you can do. It's essential to strengthen all your muscles, but strengthening your abdominal, buttock, and leg muscles may be the most important, since they make it possible for you to get up from a chair and sit down. Getting out of a chair becomes an athletic event as we get older. Doing sit to stands will help you to maintain your function and independence. To do a sit to stand, sit in a fixed chair with your knees at a 90-degree angle. Stand up slowly without using your hands, then sit down. Repeat 10 times. To make it harder, do the movement with your arms folded. Eventually, hold free weights in each hand when you stand. Now I'm going to turn to the Harvard Heart Letter, and I'm going to start with Ask the Doctor with Dr. Deepak L. Bhatt. And the first question that Dr. Bhatt, who is the editor-in-chief, encounters is, should I add cocoa powder to my diet? Many doctors and nutritionists recommend eating dark chocolate in moderation, and I've heard I should look for bars that are 70% cacao, but wouldn't it be easier just to add a teaspoon of 100% unsweetened cocoa powder to my morning coffee? Dr. Bhatt says, that's a reasonable question, especially since one of the common caveats about eating chocolate bars is that they typically contain considerable amounts of sugar, fat, and calories. The potential health-promoting compounds found in chocolate include a category known as flavanols. These compounds are abundant in many plants, including cocoa beans, which are the seeds of the cacao tree. Diets high in flavanols have been linked to improved cardiovascular health, possibly by relaxing blood vessels, which lowers blood pressure, and improving blood sugar control. Cocoa beans are fermented, dried, roasted, and ground into powder for use in foods and beverage. In theory, adding cocoa powder to your diet seems like a healthier way to consume flavanols than eating chocolate bars. But it's not that simple, because it turns out that the flavanol content of cocoa powder varies widely and depends on several factors, including the genetics of the particular cacao plant harvested and the makeup of the soil in which the crop was grown. But the way the beans are processed probably has the biggest effect. Dutch processed cocoa is treated with a substance that makes it slightly less acidic, which removes some of the bitterness, but also some of the flavanols, according to my Harvard Medical School colleague, Dr. Howard Sesso, who studies heart disease prevention, including the role of dietary flavanols. Because flavanols aren't listed on the nutrition facts panel of food packaging, it's not possible to know how much different brands contain. If you like the flavor of unsweetened cocoa powder in your coffee, there's no reason not to add it. But you probably won't get a very big dose of flavanols. If you like chocolate, having a few small squares of dark chocolate can be a good way to satisfy a sweet tooth and modestly boost your flavanol intake without adding excessive calories and fat. Dark chocolate likely has more flavanols than milk chocolate. In terms of heart health benefit, the best option is to eat plenty of fruits and vegetables for a variety of flavanols, as well as heart-healthy nutrients like fiber, vitamins, and minerals. According to Dr. Sesso, good food sources of flavanols are berries, grapes, and black or green tea. And then here's a brief article in Research We're Watching, also in the Harvard Heart Letter of July 2022. Presidential elections, hard on the heart? Emotionally stressful events that affect large number of people, including natural or other disasters, have been linked to an increase in heart attacks. New evidence suggests that contentious political elections have a similar effect. In a study of 6.4 million Californians, heart attack rates were 42% higher in the 5 days after the 2020 presidential election than during a five-day period 2 weeks before the election. In a 2020 survey by the American Psychological Association, 68% of respondents cited the 2020 presidential election as markedly stressful. These new findings echoed results from a similar study after the 2016 election. More research is needed to understand the intersection of political events, associated stress, and heart-related risks, the authors say. But exercise and other stress-busting strategies like mindfulness, meditation, and yoga may be helpful. Well, it looks like we're out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.